Hello, the Brain Trust welcomes you. Why don't you have a seat and let us caress your brain with visions of game. We are Adam and Will, two priests in the temple of role-playing. I, of course, am Adam of World Champ Game Co. And this one got away from me a little bit already.
And I'm Willie Obst of Good Luck Press, and we're going to be walking you through the ASMR gamer experience.
So yeah, it did get a little...
You can go ahead and lower yourself into the sensory deprivation tank. We will be undepriving one of your senses, and that is ears for podcast. Can you listen to a podcast in a sensory deprivation tank?
It would be...
We'll answer questions like that and more on this episode of the Brain Trust Podcast. Before we get any further, I want to tell you that we're in our new season of the Brain Trust, and you can, and we'll talk about this later, you can go to our Ko-Fi and subscribe to get cool things like bonus episodes, special rewards, and you know, cool stuff like that. Throw us a few bucks so we can keep on making this cool thing. And you can find the link in the show notes. But back to the pressing question: sensory deprivation tank, fuck, marry, kill all of your senses. Which one are you bringing in?
As a note, listening to a podcast in a sensory deprivation tank would be nightmarish. Absolutely. Especially this show, honestly.
I would become part of the podcast.
All of my hiccups that go unedited would just, like, echo in your brain forever.
Yeah, it would be bass boosted by design.
First, I think fuck is touch. I mean, it's a little on the nose, right?
Fuck is touch.
It's a little obvious, but I think that's a good one. I'm going to go marry...
Sight, you're looking them up.
No, Frankie's losing it for this hardware
the
guy.
Five senses are taste, touch, sound, vibration, smell when things smell really bad, and smell when things smell really good, and the thing where you can like look at something and your tongue can tell how it feels. So tongue touch, physical touch, and then the feeling when you have a great conversation.
I'm going to marry my hearing.
Yeah.
I don't want that one to get away from me.
I feel like if you... I know you have tinnitus.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you're really committed to your relationship with your hearing, some of those issues might get fixed. You know, you could really work on your relationship to your hearing.
Yeah, it just requires a really heartfelt conversation.
You can get over misophonia with just hard work, okay? Marriage is hard.
And kill, I'm going to go with taste, because they also say that, what, like 70% of taste is actually just smell? I'm gonna just hope that smell kind of picks up some slack and the actual taste, I can kind of supplant that.
I don't need that. Yeah, and you're in a sensory deprivation tank. What are you going to be tasting?
The inside of your own mouth. It's awful.
Salt water, Epsom salt, the link cable for your podcast that you're playing.
I've done sensory deprivation only once, but it's so humid in there that like I don't smell anything already because it's just sort of like making my sinuses go buck wild.
Mm.
And you're floating, so your head's kind of tilted back a little bit, so you're not smelling anything. Maybe that's the design. Maybe the sensory deprivation that's removing smell is clogging your nose. Yes.
They just block it off. They're like, we're not gonna try and make smells go away. You know what do I own your apartment? I'm not focused on getting the smells out. I'm focused on killing your ability to smell. And I feel like, you know, when I had COVID, I lost my taste. And I didn't notice until it was pointed out. So that's going to be kill for me. I'm going to kill taste as well. I think because I've been without it.
Sure.
I am fully fucking sight. Because I know I'm going to start like hallucinating cool stuff in there. Like, I'm going to start just seeing, you know, like when you close your eyes and you look into like the brain white noise that is made when you close your eyes?
Yeah, of course. So when I did sensory deprivation, I kind of went in with that expectation and attitude, and I didn't really get anything. It was just dark.
No, you just saw, like, the ceiling.
People do, but I did not.
Well, I'm going to be banking on cool visuals. As someone who doesn't do any psychedelics at all, I would like some cool visuals, please. Some non-destructive visuals. And what am I going to marry? I'm going to marry my sixth sense, which is the sense for when we move on to the next part of the podcast.
My ability to see dead people.
My ability to see dead people. Wait, what are some sixth sense? We've got Spidey sense.
Yeah.
We have got
the Haley Joel Osment sixth sense.
Yeah. The seeing dead people. We've got telekinetic sixth sense. So, like, I can tell that you can read my mind.
Mm-hmm.
The sixth sense when, like,
scanners.
Like, scanners, yeah. When you're doing something and you feel like someone is about to come up behind you, and you get this awareness.
I was gonna say, just vibe. Just the sixth sense is vibe, sensitivity.
Yeah, vibrations. And then, kind of a spiritual sixth sense. Like, I want to look up in the air and be like, oh, my planet of Alderaan has been destroyed, you know, something like that.
Yeah, those are all good ones. Those are all.
Yeah,
this isn't it, but think about this is not today's episode, but think about you got strength, dexterity, wisdom, or whatever, and then you got the sixth sense. Like, every character should have a sixth sense.
Yes,
and it's one from the pick list we just wrote.
Okay, I think that's great. I love asymmetrical stats, right? So you have your, you know, your three stats for your OSR stuff, and then you've got one that, like, that represents your class. And
yeah, I mean, on some level, even the idea that, like, so in a trad game, a wizard uses intelligence to cast spells, but a fighter still has an intelligence score. What if it's just, like, roll for magic? And since the fighter doesn't have a magic stat at all, they can't even attempt those things.
Yeah,
like, the asymmetry leads to specific types of play. And
yeah, as two people that practice multiple types of art and craft, I feel like we vibe with this idea a lot, because some people will be like, I could do that. I could have done that when they see some art. And I feel like if you have spent enough time trying to make some art happen or some hobby happen, you know that you can't. You know how much work it takes. So I like that. Like, a fighter is going to see things that a commoner doesn't. Or, like, say you're, like, a tinkerer kind of class, a mechanic. You have an innate understanding, but also a learned understanding. Yeah, it's like a background skill.
Yeah. Damn, that's actually a good put. Yeah. Even if I
put
if you're
that in the game, put it in the game, Adam.
If you're gonna have, like, regular stats, just give one weird one. But just put everybody's get a weird one.
Yeah, I will plug Plasmodics here in that from this idea and from the stats in games like Disco Elysium, which are all really idiosyncratic. I wanted a game where you had skills or stats that only you could have. So Plasmodics has something like 130 or 150 different nuances that represent different pieces of your personality and your history. There's body, mind, and skill nuances, and then a nuance for your background. So if you picked, like, the alien background, one of the nuances is that you're a body snatcher and you're an imposter. You look like everybody else, but you're really an alien among us. And there's lots of it's so much fun at the table. So yeah, check out Plasmodics.
As we roll for our ability to segue, that's our sixth sense.
I had such skill. A good one lined up. And we're just talking about too much fun stuff.
We're talking about role-playing games, as always, as we do on this show. This is a show about role-playing, tabletop role-playing, game design and stuff. And I already forgot what today's topic was.
Wait, you know what? We should probably reintroduce ourselves to everybody. But like, let's just take the moment to say, like I mentioned in the beginning, we are on Ko-Fi. You can go to ko-fi.com/thebraintrust. You can give us a tip, or you can subscribe on a monthly basis.
Hold
you
on. I forgot, but we have braintrust.rocks as our like hub. That's a lot easier to...
Braintrust.rocks.
So braintrust.rocks will take you to our Ko-Fi, where you can become a subscriber, where you can access extra stuff, where you can tip us a little coin to make sure that we keep doing the show and that we care about it, and you can buy merch. Also, there's links to the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. There's links to both Will and my web stores, where you can learn about our new releases. And there's a link to our Discord, where you can join us and have design conversations and play Super Smash Brothers and do whatever we do in our day-to-day in the Discord of the Brain Trust.
Yeah, I would love to also have a poll on the Ko-Fi for what we talk about and what kind of episodes we do. But like Adam alluded to, we're going to roll on our episode table and call up an episode. So go ahead and grab your... what's the biggest dice you have near you?
Within reach? Let's see. I have... ooh, this seems to be a screw.
that's a screw, actually.
I have a small, like, skeleton holding a mace or a flail.
This is kind of a huge indictment of you not having dice within arm's reach on your desk.
I have a D6 car. I have a car that Alfred Valley gave me when we hung out. It's a Hot Wheels that is turquoise. It says "See me rolling" on the top.
Oh my!
And then
God.
There's like two small front wheels, and then one large back wheel that itself is a D6. So when you're looking at like top down of the car, there's a little window that shows you what the thing is. So as it's driving, you see this D6 rolling. And at any time that the car would stop, it gives you a result.
Why don't you go ahead and give it a spin?
That's between 3 and 4. It's not...
All right.
It's round, so let's call it a 4.
3.5?
Yeah. Everyone's favorite. 3.5.
I like that. So we are going to do a... We got a bunch of different styles of episodes. This one is going to be... a tech lab. Tech lab like we did last episode. So first we have the tech lab theme. And we talk about a specific mechanic or a set of mechanics or practices at the table and kind of discuss them. And something we're thinking about this week is the meta roles at a table. I'm talking about, like, not your class, kind of not what you're doing, not your playbook, but what you as a person are contributing to the group that kind of aligns with your specialty. So this could be like, I'm the person who brings snacks. I make the art while other people are role-playing. That was rude to people that draw during games. I love that. I mean, like, either between games or, yeah, other stuff like that. My first question is, have you had any of these roles at the table?
I'm sure that I have, but not in, like, an explicit way. Like, you're doing this. You know, you kind of fall into them. A lot of the times. I think a lot of the time that I was playing a lot more frequently, I was host. I would say that's a role. People would come to my house.
King.
At my table, and, you know, we'd like, that's the location facilitator, the scout.
Yeah, I feel like I did the same thing with that. I feel like that's a common game master deal.
Yeah, we would... play different systems. We would rotate who was running games and picking games, but just the location was static and it was reliable, and it was like every Monday or every Wednesday or whatever at the same place. So, which also helps a lot, I think, for like pick up and play kind of groups, or something like West Marches or Cyber Metal or Plasmatics, where you can have like subsections of a group.
Yeah.
Play stuff together. Yeah, that was definitely mine. I occasionally would be the portrait artist of, like, between sessions, here's, like, a scene, or here's our characters just chilling or doing whatever.
That's the one I want to be the most. Like, I'm going to try and do that for one of my ongoing games right now, because it would just be really fun to do portraits, and I'm now thinking of, like, the characters and iconic scenes from the session, and I'm like, okay, I think I want to draw that. I think I want to draw the worm fight, everybody.
There's a artist who I like, who I'm pulling up on TikTok, who does like live portraits at metal shows.
Oh my God. Yeah.
His name is Kim Diaz Holm. And, so yeah, he will go to metal shows in Europe, and kind of like how show photographers are expected, like B-side stage and documenting the concert, but he's headbanging with ink and pens and drawing like the performers and just sort of like the energy of it.
That's so sick.
It fucking rules. I really want to. There's a few people in America who do this too that I find are more like in indie leaning, I guess. Like, this is the one dude who I follow who does it for metal, and I think it translates really well to like a different kind of illustration style, obviously. I really want to start doing that and like practicing that
that energy. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. It makes so much more sense to me for metal than like indie,
right,
quote unquote indie music,
right?
Because I heard this cool drawing tip that to like get good line quality, you just got to imagine you're skiing downhill and you can't go back up. That's like how you should be making every single line that you make. And it's like, that really tracks for metal. Like,
yeah,
you need the energy there.
It's fast. It's like scraping.
So much more dramatic.
Yeah. There's ink spray, but it's like part of it. But I want to like, yeah, I think, and that's true of RPGs too. Like, different games are going to beget different visual styles, and
yeah,
I'm a big like doodler while I play. Not necessarily anything like worth. It's not like for presentation.
You're just,
I guess,
occupying your hands,
but yeah, that's part of it for sure. But like, my character sheet will have little like doodads and characters, and like, if we were playing Cyber Metal, like drawing little pieces of tech and shit in the margins, like.
That's great.
Yeah, just sort of one to keep me focused. It is like a fidget in itself, but it's also just a, yeah, cool, like creative. It's a different way of being involved. Like, I think all of these roles, their intent is to keep everyone involved in the ways that they need, because everyone's brain works differently.
Yeah, I think let's cover the like main roles as laid out by like early RPGs. So there is the mapper. That person like takes care of like drawing the dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I have to ask you about this. I'm going to put a pin in this, but I was running a dungeon the other day, and I literally didn't know how to unveil the dungeon. It's like something that I feel like all these dungeon crawls make it. It's kind of just implicit how you actually run the dungeon. But this one had a lot of T-junctions and stuff and a lot of interconnected rooms. And I found myself just, like, struggling at the pace of it. So let's come back to that. So you got the mapper. My mapper wasn't mapping. That's my problem. You have the quartermaster, the person who's, like, in charge of, you know, the party's money or how much food they have or their items, inventory, that kind of stuff. The hirelings, things like that. And then there's the caller. And this is a really cool role that involves when you're playing with a huge group, maybe, you know, more than five people, maybe you're playing with a dozen people or more. The caller is the person who communicates the party's plan to the game master. And once it gets to the caller to say, that's the plan that we do.
They're the...
And I've actually...
when you're on a jury, they're the one person who talks to the judge.
Yeah. They are the main character from Jury Duty, if you saw that show. and I have played in a... I played one session of a giant game of RuneQuest that had so much, like, the game master would say something, and then the party would talk for 15 to 25 minutes.
Classic trad game.
Which is incredible to me. It is so... It's such an interesting style of play, and it's like, you're just hanging out, just throwing out situations. Like, that's what that is. And then the caller, the GM will, like, wake up, and then the caller will tell them what's going to happen, and the GM, coming out of deep cryo sleep, is then able to narrate what happens then. But I asked this question on Twitter and got a lot of other really good roles and stuff like that. One that Jackson from the Brain Trust mentioned was that he is the guy that loves interrogating NPCs.
That's great. I think so. I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3, which is its own whole... Maybe that's like a bonus set because I could go on forever.
Frick yeah.
I love it.
I gotta play it so we can talk about it.
I fucking love it. But it highlights to me, because I'm the one player and I have a party of four, those specialties, right? Like every time I have to pick a lock, I'm asking Asterion to pick the lock because he's the most adept at it. And if he fails somehow, I can have another character try it or whatever. But that's like mechanical, right? That's, I know he has the most plus sleight of hand or whatever. I like the sort of, we know that Jackson enjoys this sort of confrontational conversation in role play. So
yeah,
we can let them do that for our party when it comes up.
Oh, I really like that idea that this player can inhabit the other characters doing this role. So this role supersedes player ownership. So it becomes a troop style game. Like, say you were the player that loves diplomacy. That was another one. Like, how do we talk to the important NPCs? Because some people are just going to do the Skyrim thing and just like kill the closest person to you. It's like, oh, I just got a new gun. I wonder what kind of sound it makes. That kind of thing. But yeah, you have your specialties. I actually really love this for like a political game, because I feel like everyone who plays in a political intrigue style game might like a certain type of like subgenre inside of that, whether it's like the seducer, or the hostage negotiator, or, you know, things like this. And
yeah, I mean, so I just played Greenhorns from Spicy Tuna RPG, and or I played the beta, rather. It's not fully out. It's coming to Kickstarter this month, but played it with the guys in Weekly Scroll. It was really fun, but I recognized in doing, like, part of the game is that we're like going through these chambers and we're trying to hit every chamber to complete it. And every time I'd be like, can we just like walk to the next chamber? Like, I'm not necessarily an instigator. I was just mission focused. And there were a couple times where it was like one of the guys would sort of take points on whether or not we're going to instigate conflict here, or if we're just trying to like complete the mission. And that is a thing for me too, of like, and especially because I've been playing more video games than tabletop lately, I'm just more goal driven, and I wasn't in a setting where I was like as immediately comfortable or understanding of what my role playing goals were. So I kind of got to see this in practice of like, hey, just so you know, my character is a support character and my goal is to finish this maze. So that's always going to be my vote. Like, you guys can sort of take that into consideration and then make decisions, because I'm not a decision maker in this way.
Nice. You just know what both your character would want to do. This is not like my character would do this. I'm right. Nervous, yeah. It's like, you know your taste right now and what that looks like.
And part of that was learning a new system and trying to figure out where I as a player fit into it. But
yes, yeah,
it was an innate, or like it was a nice practice of this theory of like, give someone the keys to your car and trust that they're going to make the same decisions that you would. And then you can come back when you need, like, when you kind of snap in.
Or that it always feels interesting in that way.
Yeah, because I think when you get into, especially like going back to a diplomatic event or a political game, that would not be my strength of creativity in play either. So me being included in that is kind of just going to, like, bog it down. I want to, again, like, hand my character sheet theoretically, or like, you know, metaphorically, to the person who thrives on political role playing instead of being a wrench in the works. Like,
I'm thinking like we all have our character sheets and who we're playing because we need people that we're invested in and entangled with and stuff like that. But what if there was like a playbook that you got from the center? It's like you had this belonging outside belonging element of pickup playbooks where you get the interrogator or you get the smooth talker and you have moves in there that you use or just even like a script to use to get really in the mode. Because I think like I couldn't sit here and invent like how do the kings talk to each other or how does someone beseech? How do I beseech? So you've got your beseeching guide that you can pull up and it'll have like, I'm imagining like a trifold. The middle fold has like, here's beseeching 101, bro. Here's like what you want to do and here's what you do. And the left side will have like, here is very crass and like sloppy and messy and rough. And here's the other side will have like, here's the really ornate stuff. I feel like something like that would really help me in those situations, because I can make choices on how to proceed with like a courtly vibe.
This gives me an idea, and this is maybe something that we can put out through braintrust.rocks, of like, we could just make these meta roll sheets, like 5 or 6 of them that you plug into any, like they're system agnostic. You're That's playing a fantasy sick. Game and say, real quick, I'm going to grab the diplomat move sheet from the middle because I'm going to do something diplomatic on the team's behalf. And it has, you know, those couple moves, those couple ways of interacting in fiction that are reflected then in like meta decision making that, again, it's going to give players that choice of like, this is something I really want to do. And like, you know, let me take the spotlight for a second. You guys just trust me and I will hit this.
And let me like having them be like fighting game combos that you can use. So like here are the 5, you know, the 5 or 10 different diplomatic strategies. And here's like 3 combos you can use to blast open and to move the conversation and story forward. Cause I feel like for me, cause I'm not as used to those intrigue diplomatic games. They always get a little bogged down and overwrought when I'm in those scenes.
And really, most trad games for me, that the moments that are interacting with characters that are not combat-based, I'm just sort of like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Because I know that question doesn't necessarily have an innate answer, but it feels like sometimes it does, you know? Like there's a right and wrong way to interact with certain things. And you don't know until you've done it. But yeah, I think this might be a cool kind of bonus thing that we can offer is say like, we are in, so like even one of the things I wrote down is being like war captain, like we're in combat.
Oh yeah.
And everyone's making their own decisions, but like one person can take the war captain move list and say like, maybe this helps change initiative. Like you have like group based initiative and the war captain kind of chooses who goes next. And then also like you can coordinate attacks in that way. Like I as a player can communicate with the war captain and say like, here's what I'm able to do, here's what I'd like to do, but the war captain kind of aggregates all that and says, like, here's our plan of attack. But you can do that with different, like, that's just a combat-based one. Like, you could have a survivalist who, like, oh, we want to go X direction, or it's going to, especially in, like, a hex crawl situation of, like, if you're tracking resources or you have vehicles or anything like that, like...
Yeah, here are my priorities. Here is... Yeah, here's the kinds of things we would do. And it helps... It's, like, gives you scene starters and stuff like that.
Yeah, it gives... It speeds up some of the parts where you're... Like you were talking about with RuneScape, where people are just talking for a long time, because now you have someone who is... the sort of senator of the group, right? Like, I'm listening to all my constituents and I'm making the decision. And then because I grab the sheet, like, it's something I care about. So that decision is not just flippant. Like, it's informed by even just my own desire to play a certain way.
Yeah. And you can have a little, like, library... takeout card on there that's like, here's who played this role last.
Yeah.
And so you can
maybe there's even, like, I guess it wouldn't be a rule, but a suggestion would be like, don't take the same role twice in a row. Like, if you have that list and you can see, like, oh, I was just war captain, it's somebody else's turn to play war captain.
Yeah.
And maybe nobody wants to, but so then it ends up on me again, but like, try to share, like, you know, that's what so many of, like, unwritten rule of role-playing, too, is share that spotlight. Don't grab the war captain card every time there's a battle.
Wow. We started this as a tech lab, and it turned into a new type of episode that we're going to call Playstorm.
Playstorm.
We need a theme for this.
I think this one's a hard rock song. I think just, like, storm in music is going to make me think of, like, like Iron Maiden-y kind of, like...
Yes. Elephant by Tame Impala, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And we have a sample. There's got to be a sample of, like, a thunderclap or something. We're playstorming.
You're still here on the Brain Trust podcast. We are talking about... I don't know. I'm like reintroducing as if this is a radio show.
The segments are like sub shows.
They're sub shows. It's a show in the show. But yeah, we just went from concept to basically actual play with this idea of the pick up and play. Roles at the table. That's great. That's just there's this old thinking that players are a certain type of way. Like, I think it's in Robin's Laws of Good Game Mastering. I don't know if you've read that book.
I haven't, but that's very clever.
It's hilarious. Robin's got a lot of cool ideas about RPGs, and this one in particular is that there are, like, you know, 7 or 8 player archetypes. And there are different ways to satisfy those types of players. And I think that is a little boxy, because I think as players, both of us like a wide range of stuff. Sometimes we want to crash and bash, and sometimes we want to slow down and have a hangout scene or whatever. And I think these roles, these personas are a great way to have it at the table and, be able to pick up a role and try it out. For example, I was at a coffee shop today and I saw that there was an eggnog latte and I wanted to try it out. And I'm not that kind of eggnog latte person. By the way, if you hear me just step away from the mic for about 15 minutes, that will probably explain what happened there. But yeah, just the option to experiment, I like.
Yeah, like you said, that I'm not one archetype or the other on a given day or time, or even in one session. But I think some of that theory stuff still exists, you know, like And to go back to the sheets, like, some days I do want to be war captain, and some days I kind of want to, even if there is combat, like, just take less of a spotlighted role. And that might have to do with what mood I'm in, or what character I'm playing, or what system it is, or any number of factors. But having just these sheets in the center accessible to everybody allows you to then cure, each individual is also curating your experience in that way. I wouldn't necessarily call it a safety tool, though in a way it kind of is. I would call it like a comfort tool.
Yeah, calibration.
Yeah, calibration. That kind of thing. Yeah, saying like, you know, I'm having a good time. I still want to play this game and I'm still hanging out with my friends, but I don't want to, be picky about the way that we survive this exploration. So there's the survivalist card, and I'm not going to grab it, but it's still part of the game. It's still part of the world. I guess there's also, as a calibration tool, the event when you have these sheets and no one's taking any of them, then I think the game master can sort of learn, like, to sort of push, or I guess to offer different things, I guess, you know, like.
I think these things could be challenges, too. You could challenge the next, say you were the war captain. To ever get the war captain again, you have to challenge someone else to take it. So you're like, all right, Adam, I want to see what you do with the party schmoozer role. And so I'm going to give that to you next.
Yeah. And then I think, yeah, there's innately, like, I could be like, oh, I'm not in the mood. And then we kind of can reassess like what this session is. But I think also that's some good game mastering too, of just like making sure people are sharing responsibility and are involved to the extent that I think is required. Like, obviously that extent depends on the game and the group and whatever, but you don't want people like fully tapping out, not paying attention or not having a good time.
Yeah.
So you doing that could be because you see that I'm like, maybe you can like, this is more of an in-person kind of moment, but you can see like, I've got something stern in my head and I'm just like not the kind of person who's gonna butt out and like put it out there. So you can kind of encourage that behavior. Or again, like you can see I'm kind of drifting off and be like, hey, would you like to do this? Like, is this something that might appeal to you to kind of bring you back and get you more energized in that way? Like, there's a social cue aspect to sharing those.
Yeah, I think I really like that. As I'm like expanding my playtesting to include lots of types of players, including people that aren't on the improv roleplay tip as hard as we are, mm-hmm. I think this is great because it, like I said, it gives you that menu or that set list that you can put together of ideas, and then you can be creative with those scene starters or whatever.
I was thinking, because this was Playstorm segment, how we could enact this. It's probably a lot harder with just two people, obviously. But thinking about like when we were designing Campfire, and I think innately, again, we fell into these roles where I was sort of like logistics, like moving pieces on the board and arranging stuff in a space to kind of feel a certain way. And you were much more the authorial voice of like addressing the setting and making the details rich and making sure that we're like immersed in this thing. And those two things work really well together in that we're like, approaching a common goal. So the words you use inform the visuals and how cards are laid in certain spaces to evoke certain things. And, that might, you know, inspire new narrative things. Like they're cyclical. I think again, you know, with the sheets, they can feed one another and say, you know, like, you know, the war captain could be active and someone grabs the diplomat card and they interact in like a meta way, right? Of saying like the war captain has taken some action that makes me as a player who wants to be diplomatic think we could play in this, or like we could have this moment. They interject, they kind of feed one another because the diplomacy attempts are going to inform what the war captain does next, and there's like a cyclical nature to that. But I think even in the meta way, to go back further back and say, you know, like the host, the snack bringer, the those kind of meta roles, they have interactivity too. Like there's a nature to saying, like, if I'm hosting, you guys are bringing food, you know, like I'm not doing double duty there, but
Social contract stuff.
But just, yeah, the way that these roles interact with one another beyond the fact that they all facilitate play is kind of compelling. There's kind of more. And I guess what I described with you and I is more design focused, but it came through in play too, I feel like, of like after a scene, I could move the pieces, and that was kind of like my designated role, the upkeeper, right?
Right, yeah.
And it kind of allows everyone to focus on the things that they're paying the most attention to and care about the most. Yeah, I think, again, like I wanted to sort of see this in action, but I don't know how we could do it as just the two of us with no game. Do you have any ideas? I mean, it could be no.
Because
I think when we sort of reset the season, one of our goals was with playstorming to like have the idea and also show it in action.
Yeah.
Which can be, you know, this one kind of feels like it's not possible with two, but I could be proven wrong too.
I think we might be able to do it. I think what we do is we take a few minutes, maybe construct a situation, and then have a couple roles to choose from, and then see how they would play differently.
Cool. Do you have... I have a copy of Into the Odd within reach, and I feel like that's...
Oh, perfect.
...a good baseline for us historically.
Yeah, just pick a room from Into the Odd. I'm going to make the War Master... I'm going to make the diplomat, and I'm going to make the goblin. It's going to be the third role. The diplomat can take into consideration. The diplomat can find common ground, and the diplomat can advocate. The war master can marshal forces. I think that makes sense. What's the word? It's like bolster or...
Like inspire or rally?
Rally. I like that. Yeah, rally is kind of like martial forces. I mean, like in conversation, a war master could probably be gruff and...
Like puff out your chest, kind of?
And plain. Yeah. What's the word for that? Just puff out chest.
Intimidate, I guess.
Yeah, it's not quite intimidate. It's more like pull rank. That's it.
Yeah.
Pull rank. And I think the War Master can also show scars. That's a good one. It feels like an Aaron King one. Goblin can start shit. What else can a goblin do?
I don't want to use the word ruin. I was going to say ruin a plan, but like...
Complicate?
Redirect. Yeah, complicate. It's great.
How about something that implies like the goblins are fun? So like lighten the mood.
Yeah, pull a prank.
Take the piss.
Take the piss is perfect.
Start shit is a little bit like complicate. So let's find another one instead of start shit. It can be like...
I feel like stirring the pot or something like... To me, that's more of... I guess that's starting shit. But I was going to say more of like a social thing of like... Just getting
maybe
people
we
riled
can
up.
Like, yeah, complicate / instigate feels like that.
Yeah.
Goblins can also be just little guys, you know? They're just like little guys. So... avoid blame? Something like that? Shirk?
Yeah, I like that.
Shirk consequences. Okay, I've got my roles.
Cool, and I've got a room.
Listen, game designers, that's all it is. This is all you need to do. Okay, take a really good game add some garbage to it. That's it. I saw someone on Twitter talking about posting a game called The Ship of Theseus, like mod for rules.
It's cool.
And you take a rule set and you replace one rule and then play it. And then you replace as many rules as you want until it's completely your own. That is just the way I've been designing games my whole life. So that is a perfectly good and, if you're me, essential process to RPG design. Just picking a system and then getting exactly what you like in it and then eventually replacing every other part, and then you'll tweak that part to follow the other things that you've designed. And then, bam, you have a new game.
Yeah, that's everything's great. A remix.
Yeah.
As a aside, one of my zine projects for this year is I want to make a game where everything is collage, including the text. Not letter by letter. I think my self-made rule is at least two words in a row. So
it's like a playable version of the NDP design zine, which is advice in that format.
Cutting out rules and images from, I have all these old Life magazines and shit that I want to combine with the stack of games that I don't, they're not in my main mix. So I wouldn't mind cutting them up, or I have multiple copies or whatever. But that'll be, that's fun. That shit's cool.
That's sick. I love that.
So we got our room, the Coral Prince's lair. There's heaps of dead coral all around the room. To the south is a wooden door that's sort of barely being held together. To the left, a corridor, and we can hear some water flowing in there. And to the right, the coral seems to overgrow, kind of up the walls and all around, crusty, hasn't been seemingly touched in quite a while. I don't know how to relay that. This is obviously Game Master information, but behind the largest piece of crumbling coral, the Coral Prince is there trying to stay hidden.
Okay, this is great. I'm going to immediately grab the goblin sheet. That's the goblin pamphlet. That's what I definitely think first. And I'm going to complicate / instigate by just breaking off some pieces of coral to look at because they're shiny.
Yeah. What are the other two roles that we have?
We got diplomat and war master.
So
I think it makes sense to have a bunch of exploration roles, a bunch of social roles, and then some special roles.
Yeah, and I think those also are supplanting the idea I'm going to I feel our two characters are the two thieves from Home Alone. But let's just say that they're elves for the sake of we're playing fantasy.
The wet bandits. The wet elves. It's nice to get an episode title this late in the game.
Because we have these two dudes who are rolling through these caves looking for shit. And I think the goblin as the meta role, we see both of them, you're kind of pulling both character strings. I think with the idea here is we can zoom in and out, right? The roles that we're talking about are zoomed out, but at any time if we want, we can go back into the characters and play on that more trad expected level. What are the name of the wet bandits?
Joe Pesci.
Marv and Harry.
So let's elfify those names. So Harry is probably, I don't know why I'm thinking just Harry Lissimo, kind of an Italian version of Harry. What's an Elford kind of name?
I think it's just Merv.
Maeve.
Maeve.
Let me
just putting more vowels in it. I feel like it's good to go.
More glyph-like vowels. And then what's the other Harry?
Yeah, Harrelissimo.
Harrelissimo or Harith?
Harith is good.
God, this name generator is so funny.
So we've got Harith and Maeve. Maeve.
Maeve.
It's Maeve, but with an Australian accent. Maeve. Sorry. I'm sorry, everyone. because you got the goblin meta roll, we see both of them kind of just like take off and start chipping away at coral. And I think I'm going to take the war master role as and kind of embody the coral prince and be like, you fuckers, this is my like room. What are you doing? Like, just full
dare
on.
Dare you crumble my throne?
Right. Something like in that. In the text, it says they're a hideous, stretched out man with chunks of coral embedded in his pale body. He wants to be treated like royalty and lashes out if not properly respected. Which feels appropriate because, yeah, he's kind of pissed about this coral breaking.
Okay, so I'm gonna inhabit my character, Harrelissimo, and I am going to take the piss. I'm simply going to take the piss. Going to start crunching the coral. Getting a mouthful.
Ugh.
I'm a goblin guy, but I'm an elf. I'm an elf going goblin mode.
So I think this... To keep the War Master, I think I'm just going to full-on attack right away. Like, I picture him because the description says heavy, stretched-out man, that he has this grotesque... Like, the limbs are so long that he can kind of... Almost squid-like, but with joints.
Like, kind of a fucked Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
A rigid Fantastic.
If you saw... Pretzel Jack in season 4 of Channel Zero, like a contortionist.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, the Coral Prince kind of like flings himself spider-like on top of and through these like winding coral towers in the room and kind of like almost launches himself like a speedball special into Harith, like missile-like headbutt. Just right into the gut. Like, I'm using my 4 extremely long limbs to just propel myself into this torpedo of bones.
So I think this is the point where we would turn to the mechanics of the game.
Because
we've created such a... I feel like I can see the situation in my head. It's so clear.
Right.
And then, I like it. In this playtest, I find that, like, from each role, I want some, what's it called? what's the Brian Eno deck of cards called? Oblique strategies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I want some oblique strategies for experimenting, for instigating, for cooling situations down. You know, I kind of want the playbook of things that I would want to do as a player in the theme of these things.
Yeah. That reminds me, a internet friend of mine, Gabe, just made occult strategies that was on Kickstarter not that long ago. It's a sort of reflavoring, reskewing of that idea of just like, here's a deck of cards with a bunch of weird cult like prompts on it. Which I think
we just
need.
Steal the oblique strategies name? Like, do we just come up with something like that?
Yeah, we just call it oblique strats because it's gamers.
Yeah. What's like a gamer word for oblique? We'll have to find that. Obelisk strats.
Obelisk strategies is very funny as like a fantasy skewed deck. But yeah, I think this... So, I mean, I think we basically... In this example, especially as a two-player version... are supplanting a game master role and making a GM'd game GM-less without... Like, I think what you're saying would add, like, an oracular nature, which is really cool and more you and me style, for sure. But taking... Like, again, we can put this on any trad game and make it GM-less by taking those responsibilities and... divesting them, like having people take the particular roles that a game master would cover instead of saying, like, the goblin is going to be the person who brings in conflict and situations that then require you to interact with game mechanics, right? Like the things where you're going to need to roll more because you're going to have to solve the problems that player is creating.
Yeah, and I feel like in a trad GM'd game, this just adds a bunch of flavor and a extra level of like intuit communication. Because if you see the GM about to do something and they pick up the goblin book, the pamphlet or whatever, you see that, okay, some fuck shit is about to go on right now, and I'm excited.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's similar, again, like a weird tangent, but playing Baldur's Gate, it's the difference between the sort of freeform mode and turn-based mode. Like, we're going between the camera zoomed out and the camera behind being John Malkovich eyes. You know, like, we're in our character and we're in our world, and those two things are not entirely distinct, but have different ways of interacting as a player.
Incredible. This is like rhyming a lot with a system I made for Big Grave Fashion Fantasy, which the quick start should be out soon. This is the game where aesthetics rule everything. In the beginning of the game, you pick an essence, and that's kind of who you are inside of the clothes, and you get a list of verbs called modes. And it's kind of exactly like this, where you have kind of built into your character sheet like six unique approaches that only you can do. And getting different pieces of fashion gives you new modes to access, like a skill list or something like that. So I'm definitely thinking about like expanding those to be a little closer to like what we've designed here, which is very cool.
Yeah. And I think too, there's a neat thing going on of like the sort of fluid nature between a meta role, which is what started the conversation, and a role-playing role.
Yeah.
And blurring those lines and making them interact with one another in different ways. And I think even on some like very wide zoom out, we talked about like meta in play and characters in play, but even meta out of play, like saying the host gets first dibs on the diplomat role or some shit like that, like having those social roles, the roles that are being played outside of role playing, affect, like, everything is another layer zoomed out. They're all incepted playbooks within one another, because there's the group of human beings who are playing a game, there's the game, and then there's the characters within the game.
I love this.
Inception.
This is just good shit. You've just finished listening to another episode of the Brain Trust podcast. You can find us at braintrust.rocks. You can find our Ko-Fi, which you can give us a tip. You can give us a sub. You can get cool things like bonus content. I did mention that we would put a pin in Adam Teaches Will How to Reveal Rooms in a Dungeon. Maybe that could be a bonus episode.
Love
that,
it.
That sounds pretty fun. And yeah, Adam, where can people find your stuff?
Oh, at braintrust.rocks. There just happens to be handy links to both Will and my websites. You can sign up for our newsletters. You can shop our wares, learn about new releases. Braintrust.rocks is going to be your hub.
It's our homepage.
Yeah. I dare you.
Go ahead, set that as your homepage for Opera GX or Safari. Just one of the kind of rogue ones that you need to use every now and then.
Bing.
That's Microsoft Edge is on Bing. So, yeah, make us your Microsoft Edge certified content browser. And, yeah, other than that, we'll catch you next week on the first season of Brain Trust. Brain emoji, handshake emoji.